The opening night dinner at the Web 2.0 Summit 2006 featured a conversation with Nicholas Zennstrom, CEO and co-founder of Skype. This podcast is brought to you by the Intel Software Partner Program. Imagine a world technology leader as your partner, your business partner, your development partner, your marketing partner. Get an advantage in the Intel Software Partner Program. Join today at www.intel.com/partner. Here's a dinner conversation with Skype's Nicholas Zennstrom.
Nicholas, if you could come up. Nicholas Zennstrom, please join me in welcoming him.
Thanks.
Have a seat.
Yeah, that was actually incorrect. We could have come as many times we wanted. It was just a tactic that we didn't want to come.
It was a tactic.
Yeah.
You're trying to avoid being acquired by a big U.S. corporation.
Exactly. We hoped that the European companies would acquire us, but they did not get the message.
They're lost. Yeah. But let's just bring this up, and then we can let anyone else who wants to bring it up during Q&A bring it up. What's the deal with the Kazaa settlement?
I think it's the Kazaa settlement is settled, I think. So it's been it's taking a long time. I think Kazaa, when we started Kazaa in 2000, our idea was like wanted to do an application that allowed people to share videos and photos and other stuff. We thought music, we shouldn't even go there because Napster was doing a good job on that. But we thought maybe user-generated content would be a great thing. Unfortunately, we were just a bit too early. So it took 5 or 6 years for the record companies and the movie studios to actually embrace the internet. So sometimes it's not good to be too early. So, but now it's all settled, and it's settled with the movie studios, the record companies, and also now with the music publishers.
Did you get a call from Google, hey, Nicholas, how did you deal with this? You know, how much you pay these guys, how much you pay those guys?
I think Google is going to be just fine. I think what has happened is that it's a long delay because the business development people and the executives in the record companies, they've been embracing the internet now actually for some time. Unfortunately, the message has not gone through down to the legal department because they're still out there billing each other and sending legal fees to each other. So it's a bit disconnected. So I think that the timing now is actually pretty good for starting video companies.
All right, so we'll leave Kazaa. If you guys have other questions about Kazaa or the settlement, you can bring them up during the Q&A, okay? Skype was kind of, I mean, people forget that it's been, what, 13 months since eBay purchased Skype for a lot of zeros. And it's been, so 1 year, and Skype was sort of last year's, and I don't mean this in any negative way, but it was kind of last year's YouTube. Service that just exploded. It didn't have some of the copyright issues that might have been, it was simply, the telcos weren't so pleased, right? Not so pleased. They weren't calling you, congratulating on your success, were they?
You know, there's some of the telcos are, you know, friends with us, and some of are still having a bit more challenging understanding what we're doing.
You have a background in
Yes, I'm an old telecom guy, so.
Right.
But, you know, it's quite funny because it's, you know, we and any other, you know, everyone here in this room here today are helping the telcos sell broadband connections because people don't want to have a broadband connection just to send a packet to your neighbor. You want to access all these great services which are on the internet, if that's eBay or Skype or Google, YouTube, Flickr, or whatever it is. Without these services, people will not buy broadband. So we are actually helping the telcos to sell broadband connections.
Right. So how's it going 1 year in? I mean, Skype, this startup, you and your partner, all innovation-driven, wild growth. You had a business plan which actually predicted the growth, which I think is somewhat unique.
Yeah.
You join eBay, and I'm a big fan of eBay, but let me just say that of all the internet companies that I've spent time inside of, they're the most...
Data-driven.
Data-driven, exactly. The most data-driven, yes. So It's not a place where PowerPoint has been banned. Let's put it that way.
No, we actually had more PowerPoints in Skype before the acquisition. We have very little PowerPoints now.
All right. Well, let's go back to the original question. How has it changed Skype to be part of eBay?
So no, it's been great. So first of all, what we did, one of the kind of the agreements that we had with Meg and her team was that Skype should be a standalone company, and we should take advantage of synergies when we need when they are beneficial, but not just for the sake of it. So we had this pull instead of push. You know, you've seen it so many times when technology companies are acquiring small companies, and 1 year after, you don't see these companies anymore because you know they got completely dismantled. That happens like when you know Cisco or Microsoft or some other companies are acquiring companies. So we said here, this Skype needed to be a separate company so you can still you know foster the growth and the innovation in of the company, but we should take advantage of synergies when we have them. So we decided, you know, we can pull on, for example, we move into new offices, rather than like me trying to figure out how many square meters we have, we just call on the eBay facilities team and they sort it out. Of course, we tell them how we want to design and everything. So those things have been really good. The other thing that's been also very good is to get some executives who have been part of hypergrowth, because it's quite difficult in Europe, it's very difficult to hire executives have been part of like a very successful, fast-growing internet company. It's not that many of them are there. So that's been great just to get some of the executives being part of the early stages of eBay and the growth to come and help out with it, you know, with the company.
But now that you've had a year, what has, you know, what are you doing at Skype that you wouldn't have been doing had you not been acquired by eBay?
I think the biggest difference to me was that, the biggest difference is that now we have to manage according to a quarterly budget.
So being a public company.
Being a part of a public company is a big, big difference. And it's much, much harder to make the right decisions for the company when you also need to do that with the constraint of the expectation of a quarterly budget. That's, to me, was the you know biggest. Before, we had, of course, we had a budget, but it was just more you know, giving a guidance of cash flow rather than we needed to meet our, you know, our profit or not so much profit maybe, but our revenues.
So far, profit hasn't been an issue at
Skype. No, not an issue for us.
Not an issue yet. It's good not to have that constraint.
We're getting there, though. We're getting there.
No, yeah, actually the numbers, and let me see if I can find the numbers. Looks like about $160 million in revenue this year, up from...
So yeah, last year was... about 60 million, and it's going to be a little bit short of 200 million actually this year.
A little short of 200 million.
Yeah.
So that's good growth.
It's good growth. Actually, what we did, we mapped.
You still have about 4 or 5 years to grow into that price, you understand.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of very smart bankers out here today who can like work on the multipliers. But, you know, there's actually what we did, we indexed back the revenues of Skype compared to PayPal and eBay from like the years of inception, and we're completely outperforming both eBay and PayPal actually on revenue from year of inception. So actually quite few companies are growing as fast as we're growing in revenue.
Now, let me just ask you a question. Let's pull back for a second here. You said that, and this is something that I didn't actually know, I probably should have, but when we spoke earlier, you said that the original, and you just mentioned the original business plan of Kazaa was that you thought it would allow people to share particularly videos and user-generated content and so on. But you were early.
Yeah.
So we just had a big event in the industry with YouTube. What do you make of that company?
I think it's you know great. First of all, the timing was phenomenal for YouTube because if they would be 1 year earlier, they would probably get sued much by the media companies. Now the media companies were holding back. They were actually wanting to work out business models. So the, you know, timing is everything. Also, when we started Skype, the timing was also right for us. And timing is not necessarily good timing in terms of like the founders sitting holding back. Yeah, let's wait a few months before we start working on this. It's more kind of luck as well.
So Kazaa was early, Skype was dead on.
Yeah.
And what do you see Skype being in 2, 3, 4 years that it's not right now?
Yeah. So you know, when we started Skype, we wanted Skype to be the most popular communications company around the world. And we've come up quite far towards that, but we still have a long way to go. And what's the biggest, kind of the two biggest challenges that we hope to be able to crack are getting Skype outside of the computer, so to on mobile handheld devices. And that's kind of starting to happen now. It's been a lot of work to then make that happen, but it's still just being launched, but there's no volumes on that. The other thing is also to develop revenues outside of telecom. Today, most of our revenues are coming from telecom revenues. All the Skype to Skype calls are free. You're paying for making calls to other landlines and mobile phones. You know, in maybe 5 years or something like that, those revenues are going to be kind of diminishing because telephone calls basically going to be completely free. So what we're working on now is developing revenues around e-commerce and advertisement services. So those are the services that we want to develop more.
So talk a little bit more, because Eric mentioned this when we spoke earlier. He said the same thing. Phone calls should be free, and the reason is there's a business model that supports free phone calls, and that's advertising. Tell us a little bit about your plans there.
So what we believe is that, you know, it's not about making a phone call. I mean, telephone calls you made 100 years ago because the technology was very constrained of dialing someone. And that's actually also where we started with Skype, but it's all about conversation, enabling the world's conversations. A conversation is, of course, you're talking to each other, you're seeing each other, you express your feelings, you want to express your share your experience from the weekend when you went out for a car drive and you maybe were filming a video or taking pictures. So around those things is that you to share content, you know, within the conversation, because, you know, what's the first thing you say when you call someone? So what's the weather? What did you do last, what did you do last weekend or whatever? So if you can share content with each other in the conversation, that enriches the conversation. And that also, that gives you a carrier for different types of commercial content, if that's, you know, advertisement sponsored, or some of that content could be commercial content.
Now, there's been a lot of conversation about how Skype's turning into a social network. And when you and I spoke earlier, you had an interesting kind of riff on the idea of Skype and social networking. Yeah. So tell me whether or not Skype's going to take on MySpace and where that's going. Yeah.
So we've been always kind of discussing internally, should we become a social network? Should we work with the social networks? And I think we've actually had conversations with most social networks that have been coming and going. And some of them, we're working with a few social networks in Europe where they are enabling communications between the users with Skype. What we saw early on with some other social networks we had discussions with, they were quite afraid of that the conversation would be handled outside of their website. So they would lose, you know,
they
wanted to keep it in the walled garden, So that's been the challenge. And for us, you know, when Skype started, was very much a utility to communicate with each other. It was about communicating one-to-one or friends-to-friends or colleagues-to-colleagues. So we're not really want to become another social network. We rather work with them so that you can share your content for YouTube or MySpace or Bebo, whatever you want, any kind of web content you should be able to share with each other while you communicate on Skype. But the other thing what we're actually doing now is that we are enabling people to do voice and chat communication, public communication. So you can, if you have a blog, for example, in the next version of Skype that's going to be released soon.
So Skype 3.0.
Yes.
When are you announcing that?
Soon.
Not here?
Not here.
I thought we had it all nailed down.
It's coming out soon, really soon. So stay tuned.
If it's Friday, I'm really going to be pissed at you.
No, but what I will tell you, though, I will give you some sneak previews what it's about.
Please.
So what we're doing is that we are making, rather than just having one-to-one conversation, you can have public conversation. So you can post a link, for example, on a blog or whatever, a website, and you click on that and you're getting into a public chat room, which you can moderate. You can also have Skype casts, which we actually have had in some test versions previously. So you can hold a public conversation, public conference, audio conference that you can moderate. So, you know, you can imagine that you can have like a mini Web 2.0 seminar on Skype. And that's pretty cool, a way for people to host different communication conversations online.
Coming soon.
Coming soon. Very
coming
soon.
Soon. All right. Pulling back a bit to the media companies, if I can ask, as someone who's had extensive interactions with them, or perhaps none at all, and only through your lawyers, what do you make of where they are right now? As a group, I know that it changes, you know, individual to individual, but as opposed to where, you know, where they might have been 5 years ago.
Yeah. So 5 years ago, it was impossible to get a meeting with them. Today, they're getting on the bus. Some of them are pushing the accelerator pedal, want to drive the bus, and some other of them are maybe, and even within the same company, are pushing the brake pedal. So it's a bit, the trip is a bit jerky right now. So some of them are, you know, we're having great, you know, conversations and meetings with a lot of people in the media companies, and they really want to develop new businesses. And then when you come to the next level, they have to clear all the rights, and even though they think they have all the rights, but they're like, say that there's some old TV content, for example, they don't even know how to clear all the rights for whoever were doing some background singing, because they didn't when they recorded this TV show 10 years ago, they didn't have the rights for the internet, stuff like that. So it's like quite frustrating for some of them, but they're certainly getting on the bus, but the bus is going quite slowly.
Got it. Let me ask you about another large industry which you have to deal with, or at least potentially may have to deal with sooner rather than later, particularly in the United States, the telecommunication industry and the cable companies.
Yeah.
Are they friends?
So the same thing there.
Some I don't mean with each other either.
Yeah.
I mean,
no,
are they friends with you?
I mean,
they must be awfully angry sitting there
so
going, look at Nicholas Zennstrom, you know, and eBay.
Yeah.
And, you know,
some of them are great friends. Like,
can you name them?
Yeah, Hutchison, for example. They're a great Hutchison 3.
I haven't heard of that.
No, they're not in the U.S. It's like in Europe.
I was like admitting ignorance.
The problem in the U.S. you don't have that many choices here, so they're not.
Okay, well, Verizon, are they a pal?
You know, Level 3 are great friends.
Level
3 are very good friends. Level 3 are good friends.
I don't get phone service from Level 3.
No, because they're in the wholesale. No, because they're in the wholesale business.
So, right. They love the fact that you eat up bandwidth. They're all for that, right?
Well, you know, what we do is that we terminate a lot of calls with them. So we send them a lot of traffic. They sell traffic to us.
Are you concerned about Verizon, SBC, AT&T?
So there's a concern that there are not so much choices for consumers, so you don't have a very good competitive situation. I was thinking, if you go to Japan or Hong Kong or Korea and most places in Europe, the competition is much better, so there's more choices for consumers. You know, when you buy a broadband connection in Europe, you buy 24 megabit connection, you have a lot of different choices, and there's price wars. And it's just a lot of competition. You don't have the same competition here, which is an issue. But put it this way, that obviously we are driving down prices for phone calls, which is good for consumers, it's good for businesses. And competition is generally a good thing. And we used another type of competition. So what the phone companies need to do, and what they actually are doing, with or without us, they are changing their business models. 10 years ago, all the revenues were from telephone line rentals and phone calls, and it was very, very expensive to make phone calls. Today, because of competition and new technologies like what we're doing, prices have gone down. Revenue is now coming from broadband subscriptions and telephone calls. In 10 years, most revenue is going to come from broadband.
But doesn't that mean that the phone companies have to acknowledge that really, at the end of the day, they're in the plumbing business? They're not in the sexy Skype, Google, super cool business.
I think that there are... Most
high margin, long tail.
Yeah. Most innovative internet services, if you look around people in here, this room and what's happening, most of them are not done by telcos. Most of them are done by usually small innovative companies which don't have any, like, are untethered to history and can just do whatever they want to do.
Right.
That's where innovation is coming. But most of those companies are quite bad at keeping uptime. You know, startup companies, internet companies, not that great in keeping, like, really reliable network and making sure things are just working like a clockwork. That's what the telcos are doing well. I think there's the assets of internet access has always value. I mean, you can always, you know, on the internet, you know, the revenue per user is quite low for any kind of internet company, even Google, compared to how much Verizon is making per customer.
Right.
And the assets they have, they can always monetize that. The challenge, of course, you know, is what are their OPEX, and if they probably need to work on their OPEX a little bit, but the cables are there, been there for quite some time, and they think they will always be able to monetize those.
Right. Last question, and we have, if the folks with mics can put their hands up and let people know where you are, so that we can get some questions lined up, because this is my last question, so if anyone has any questions. Where are they? I can't see. There's one over there and two over there. Okay. One more question for you.
Okay.
Kazaa, Skype, Venice Project. So the next thing that you're backing, and I know that you're still CEO of Skype and running Skype, but you're backing a project called the Venice Project. And Skype, in fact, is backing another project, Phone, F-O-N.
Yeah.
Phone. Tell us about both of them. Tell us about Phone first,
sure.
And then tell us about the Venice Project.
Yeah. So what Phone is doing is great because it's allowing users, people to share their Wi-Fi access point. So if you join the Phone community, your access point becomes a public access point for everyone else who is a Phone member. And the objective here is really to become the largest hotspot operator in the world. And Phone is on a good track to do that. And you can buy a router for $5. So you get another access point, and then you become part of the community. So basically a user-generated infrastructure, which is pretty cool. And the Venice project is basically bringing the best thing of TV and the best things of internet together, really taking taking television onto the internet and embracing actually the TV experience rather than the short form, low quality clips.
So let me understand this. Phone is disrupting the access business by reselling it.
No, what they're doing is actually they're increasing the value of a broadband subscription. Phone is actually working with several telcos.
Now, wait a minute. So if you buy, Verizon agree with that?
I don't know about them, but I haven't spoken to them. But there is actually a lot of good conversations with some of the
next year
US
we got to get
carriers.
The Verizon guys. I invited them. All of you, any of you know Ivan Seidenberg, any of you know Ed Whitaker.
You should get them, and you get
open
Martin
invitations every year.
From
so
at the
far
same
they've
time. No. So what it does, so all of these things are you can look at, you know, this glass is half full or half empty. If you choose to look at the downside or choose looking
I
at the upside,
I put this here on purpose.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Good point. So if you sell an ADSL line with Phone, not only do you get ADSL at home, you also get access to tens of thousands of hotspots. So actually it can increase the value. So if you're like a cable operator, all of a sudden you also provide a mobile broadband network to your customers.
Well,
that's
I've never
one
seen
way
Comcast really like the idea of sharing a Comcast connection. As a matter of fact, it was impossible for me to get DHCP working, which is to share my, get my router working, but I think Phone is a great idea. I'm a little skeptical it's going to work in the United States.
We'll see. If you go to phone.com and look at a map of San Francisco, it's actually starting to be a lot of hotspots popping up here.
Oh, San Francisco, you know, we have the speaker at the
you
house.
You take
now.
any other city, by the way, you can take Tokyo, you can take Stockholm, or you can take San Diego, or wherever.
That's great.
Happening
That's
organically
great.
Everywhere.
Now, Venice Project, just to complete the loop here.
Yeah.
The Venice Project strikes me, and I may be wrong about this, but it strikes me as an alternate distribution channel for programming. So it strikes me as not necessarily Brian Roberts' favorite thing. He's the CEO of Comcast.
You know, maybe not, but it's a good thing if you are an internet provider.
At least acknowledge that it might tick him off a tiny bit.
It may be. You know, so what? The reality.
That's what I was looking for.
The reality is that for a network operator who is not providing television services, it's actually great to partner with these kind of companies.
Right.
So, right. You know, it's quite expensive to provide. You know, the challenge is for telcos that they want to provide all these value-added services. But it's actually quite expensive to do it themselves. It's sometimes much better to partner with companies who can provide the right. services.
Right. Well said. Questions. Do we have questions lined up here? Lights are making it hard to see.
Yeah, here.
Over here. Okay, yeah. Great.
Yeah, hi. Nicholas, great to hear your comments. And my name is Rama Isola. I'm from a company called IceCube Mobile. I'm sorry. Rama Isola from IceCube Mobile. And you know, so there's two things about you from what I understand. One is that you just go ahead and do whatever you want to do without hearing, without listening to anybody, and you have a laser beam-like focus from what I understand. And my question is, how did you end up deciding that selling to eBay was, you know, doing the right thing rather than taking over the entire world and the entire telco infrastructure, which I believe you could have done?
Why did you sell to eBay?
You know, it's a great fit. So, you know, when we... It's true. It is a great fit.
Don't forget they've had some wine.
Yeah. So if you go back to what eBay is, so first we actually, you know, the first Web 2.0 company is actually eBay, if you think about it. It was all, you know, when Pierre started eBay, it was all about network, people sharing, user-generated content. That's the first, you know, Web 2.0 company. eBay built out their APIs, have thousands of developers, you know, plugging into eBay. Sometimes, you know, you forget that. So the deep down in the DNAs of eBay is identical to Skype. It's all about sharing and network effects. Sure, eBay is a much bigger company, and we are a much smaller innovative company. But the reason why I'm saying it's a good fit also is that what we are trying to do is to have a network effect of getting lots of users. We have 136 million plus users. And then we want to convert a lot of them to paying for services. And then it's pretty good to integrate with PayPal, which is the largest payment service in the world. So that's a huge effect. Today, over 22% of all payments with Skype are done with PayPal. The other effect is another synergy is, of course, to with Skype and eBay marketplaces. And today we have Skype Me buttons on over hundreds of categories in over 20 countries of eBay. So there's actually a lot of synergies. The other great thing was also there was not like services we had and eBay had, and you started to have like organizational integration, which is completely defocusing on the business. So we didn't have any kind of organizational
structure.
No, overhead or
GNA. Duplication.
Ah. No duplications. We could just focus on the business. We could take advantage of the thing. And then now eBay Inc. has, you know, three of the, you know, what I think at least is, you know, three of the top brands on the internet, the best brand for e-commerce, the best brand for payments, and the best brand for communications.
Right. Let me ask you a quick question before we go over here, which is, it came up today, Jack Ma, and you heard him, said that there was a theory that Meg went to China, saw what Jack was doing, and then bought Skype. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, I think it's a theory. The only thing that is true is that the first time I met Meg was actually in Beijing.
Ah, the conspiracy thickens.
Yeah. So maybe someone saw us there, uh-huh. And then made it like a theory.
We have a question over here.
Hi, I was wondering if you could comment on Vonage and other players like that, and what effect they have on Skype, if any?
So I don't, I mean, I don't really kind of follow what Vonage is doing. I think we are not a competitor to them. They are providing a plain old telephony service, the same kind of telephony service that you can get from your local telephone company. They happen to use the internet as a delivery mechanism. We are doing a completely different service, so I wouldn't want to comment specifically on them.
Other questions over here?
Hi, Dmitry Shapiro, CEO of VO Networks. With the recent acquisition of YouTube by Google, now creating what we all know as GooTube, and having access to basically virtually an infinite amount of very cost-effective bandwidth, how do you think that the P2P part of the Venice Project really adds significant value in a world where you're dealing with a provider the size of Google and their bandwidth capabilities and existing relationships with media companies that they're creating and kind of the iconic power now of YouTube? Yeah. How does Venice Project compete in such a yeah.
So how does Venice Project compete with YouTube?
Yeah, so first of all, I don't think it's not really the same type of service. The other thing is, when you start doing high quality video streaming en masse, it's not only a cost issue, it's also like a quality issue to run that from a server farm. P2P is very, very cost efficient, not only cost efficient, but also builds a very reliable network. Skype, for example, we never had a downtime, a single second of downtime on the Skype P2P network. It's always been up. So a P2P network is always more reliable. Secondly, I'm not sure of the existing relationship with the media companies that you refer to, what they are, that they have. So I think there's P2P is very reliable, and there's basically two different markets that they're operating in.
So I think it's going to be very interesting to watch a philosophy of peer-to-peer and a philosophy of massively scaled server farms.
Yeah.
Compete in the next.
So I think it's, first of all, it's not like a religious, like either or. You know, you want to have a combination, and you know, you want to have like business logic centralized because it's much easier to optimize. But when you get into like a lot of large data moving around, it's better to do it on the edges of the network.
Right. Well, I'm sorry that we have to wrap this up, but we have got a progressive suite party upstairs to get to, and I know that you guys want to continue your conversation, so please join me in thanking Nicholas for coming tonight.
Nicholas Zennstrom at the Web 2.0 Summit 2006. This podcast is brought to you by the Intel Software Partner Program. Imagine increasing your sales opportunities with a world technology leader as your partner. Open the door to a new world of sales opportunities as a member of the Intel Software Partner Program. Access the latest industry information and strategic planning tools, as well as Intel's global network of thousands of resellers and systems integrators who sell directly to end users. From strategic planning and product development to marketing and sales, membership in the Intel Software Partner Program brings you new opportunities to benefit every aspect of your business. Are you ready to capitalize on new sales opportunities? Join the Intel Software Partner Program today at www.intel.com/partner. Partner.